welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, I thought we would deal with the 50 ways of God to be your lover. Yeah, I know, I'm stealing that from a Paul Simon song. But, you know, it's interesting because this directly relates to a lot of different interfaces between, we'll say, what it means to be part of this entire universe, part of life, a part of God and God's growth, and at the same time, actually, it is 50 ways. So just so happens to be a nice round number like that. And I thought tonight it would be an interesting show because it has so many elements of metaphysics in it, plus quite a few spiritual issues. And it also brings together many of the facets of different religious ideas. So with this becoming a sort of, for some people, a holiday season in a spiritual sense, that would be an interesting subject to also get into as well. And I think that it further belies the fact that there is a strong, if not, we'll say, undercurrent of a spirit within all elements of how the universe actually works. Now, I know that there are a number of people who either don't believe that there is such a thing as God, or believe that if there is such a thing as God, God must be kind of a thing or creature of an odd humor, if not even neglect, about the way its supposed creations go about doing their thing. And I think we'll get into that tonight, too, because there are so many problems that we face in this realm of the universe, planet Earth, and how come these things occur? Why is it that we live within a universe in which doubt seems to be the greatest of adversaries as far as most people's spiritual understanding is concerned? It's not the only thing, but it certainly is a biggie. And I'd like to talk about that, too, because it all is part of the 50 ways. So we will discuss that to begin with, and let me define some of the things that I'm going to be talking about tonight, as I usually do. And that is that when I talk about the 50 ways of God to be your lover and for you to be a lover of God in all of its creation, is to look at it from this standpoint, that life, as we understand it, has to live as a matter of two things, that's sense and consciousness. In other words, you've got to have two elements to life for it to have any existence as what we call life. And you need awareness, which comes from sense, and you need to have some level of consciousness about what the sense supplies, which is information, of course. And when you put these together, you end up with what many people call sentiency, or in more common lingo, life. Now, I know some people say, well, what about a plant? Oh, a plant, sentient. You know, we usually think that sentiency refers to something that's conscious. Are plants really conscious? And the answer is yes, but at a level and in ways that many people miss. That doesn't mean that consciousness isn't there. It's just that it's not there in a way in which we experience the universe around us the way plants do. And so, consequently, we ignore or don't notice that they have some level of consciousness. It also is much lower overall than most people's consciousness, and that makes it difficult for us. It's difficult for any life form to determine the, we'll call it awareness and consciousness of life forms that are much below it in consciousness or much above it, even somewhat above it in consciousness. So something that's way more conscious than we are, we also may not even be aware of. That's another strange idea that we will cover tonight in the 50 ways. And so all of these things come into play when we talk about how God has 50 ways. And let me tell you what they are. The 50 ways have to do with sense. Okay? Remember that there are three parts to God's existence within its own mind and how it creates life from that. And the first two has to do with thought, and consciousness is part of God's thought. And the third way has to do with awareness, which comes from sense. And the way we sense is through a part of our form that provides us the ability to gather information from the part of the universe we call the form side or energy. So you need to have not just spirit, which is the thought of God, to be alive in most of the realms of God's existence, but you need to have a body or something to sense with in order to complete the ability to be alive. And so that's the interesting thing about the 50 ways. There are 50 distinct senses. There's actually 49, but when the 49 are moved into one, it becomes the 50th sense, which we'll call it the one. Okay, so that's really the sense of God is the 50th way to sense. The 49 senses are the senses of all the components of God's growth, which we call life, in all the myriad of ways that life can both become aware and conscious and then to express itself in its own creation, which is the other part of God's thought. So it does all these things through this very basic system. It's not that complicated, but it's amazingly, we'll say, creative. And within this very small number of elements of what makes up God, we have everything that can and does exist within our universe, or will at some time in the future. So it's a fascinating thing that something can be so extraordinarily bold and creative that it, in a very small number of ways, is able to create God. Starts off with 3, becomes 50 or 49, and then eventually the last way adds into the 50th way, which becomes fully a part of God, and that can be any part of life. So in other words, God's creation is that its means of growth comes from its creations, and it never limits those creations so that in some way they can't eventually become a full and completed part of itself. And that's so remarkable in its statement. It provides great humility for not just us, but more importantly, for God. And it's the reason that our question is answered. Why do so many things go wrong here in one of the armpits, I'll call it, of our universe, which we call Earth? Why isn't God prevalent in some way, manifesting its goodness and preventing the masses of people suffering and death and all the terrible things that seem to go on, mostly inflicted by ourselves, on each other? How come God isn't there doing something to effectively interfere with, change, or would do something to prevent the problems that seem to be plaguing this world, at least, and a number of others? But we are certainly in a prime position to be one of the heavy hitters of, we'll say, no goodness. And the reason that God doesn't do this is God is amazingly humble. Now, what does that mean? Well, in humility, God allows the growth of itself to occur unencumbered by God's, we'll say, great goodness and God's great thought, which is far beyond ours, and allows us to experience all parts of life with the, we'll say, sober attitude of one who suffers by its own mistakes and the mistakes of others that it is intricately involved with in a place, a system such as a planetary system. So here we have the fascination of God actually being a great giver to humanity of two elements, great humility, in that God allows its own creations to take over its own growth. And it does so that those creations can truly be as creative as they seek to be, or to choose not to be, but still within their own prerogative and without interference. The cost of freedom on the level of God is the cost of, we'll say, the paternal and even grand protection of a being that with slightest whim could change everything and make everything either near perfect, perfect, or something way better than what it is. And that's what we pay. We pay for it by us becoming more like our Creator and allowing those things much less than ourselves in terms of both our consciousness and sense to do the same within the realm of our own abilities. This is fascinating because so many people have, we'll say, the wrong idea, in my opinion, of what God is, and from that they draw the wrong conclusions, which leads them to the suffering of doubt, and doubt leads to fear, and fear leads to a separation between ourself and our soul. Giving our personality or the controlling subconscious part of ourselves an almost infinite level of power over us, because we can't therefore exercise the creation that will allow us to find God and to relieve us of the fears that we suffer from. It's a kind of circular problem. It does mean also that we lack humility in the process as well. Because if we had a similar humility, or at least some proportional similar humility of God, and proportional to our own level of consciousness, we would be extremely careful about the use of our absolute nature in determining control over not only all others and other things around us, which we terribly do, which is destructive to a lot of parts of life and many other people's lives. But it further leads to another more severe problem for ourselves, because it prevents us as a self, as a conscious being, to grow. And the prevention of growth leads to suffering. So we lead to our own suffering through our lack of humility. And that's the greatest cost to us. It's a huge cost, one which is terribly, we'll say, punishing. But it's not punishing by an outside source. It's punishing of our personality on ourselves. It's an amazing and serious problem. And few people, unfortunately, understand what I'm saying. And even right now, I covered this so fast, some of our audience is still, they're still scratching their heads. But you guys can go ahead and re-listen to the show, you see. And you'll be able to say, oh, well, let me listen to that 3 or 4 more times, I might get it. Well, you can do that, see. That's the advantage of this media, and it's the reason these days I go as fast as I do, because everybody could catch up in their own time, and I let them do that. It's also a discipline thing. If someone says, well, it's not important enough for me to go back over that, well, so be it. Then I guess you won't understand it, but that's your choice. And it's part of what I'm talking about right now. strangely, humility means to not interfere when others are really screwing up, because they have the right, if that's their choice, to continue to screw up. Now, what happens if someone's really screwing up, but they're trying with all their might not to, and they're using their abilities at a fairly high level, but they don't seem to match the level that they're trying to create at? Well, that's divine intervention at its best. If you want God to help, do what I just said, and you will get it. Now, I know that sounds impossible. A lot of people are sitting there probably laughing their butts off right now, saying, oh, yeah, this guy has finally crossed the line. He's nuts. No, you see, you've got to really try this to believe it. And you can't just sit there and say, well, that doesn't make any sense. Whereas that's like magical thinking. You know, I learned about that in psychology in 101. Now, listen, it's faith, yes, but it goes way beyond faith. There's some reasonable explanation for it, and I'll give it to you right now. And that is, most people, when they lack humility and they are arrogant or egotistical, and they fail because they don't put even a quarter, a hundredth maybe, of their true effort into something, and they just make the assumption everybody else is doing it wrong or whatever. And besides which, why bother? And all the other excuses that so many people use as rationalizations. The result is that God just says, okay, well, you got it. You can stay with it. You can do what you want. If you're doing, I won't interfere. Now, God knows that we're going to suffer from that. We're going to lose meaning in life. We're going to make huge mistakes that will cost us time and money, and eventually our life. In that realm, if it's the physical, we'll die from the physical realm. But we may get ill first and suffer from that. The point is, that's all up to us, okay? But God isn't, some kind of, gargoyle or something that sits around and says, well, isn't that great? Well, I shouldn't suffer. No, God is sad. God believes that a means of wanting life to grow, and he must accept this and must not involve itself. Yet at the same time, it's sad. It doesn't want to see anyone suffer. And since we're part of it, it feels our suffering. So don't think that it's like a detached guy who just sits around and says, I think I'll have another cold one while someone else suffers. No, it isn't like that at all. But at the same time, go ahead and choose to create something huge. That's good for all. That may be a great sacrifice, and likely is, for yourself. And use your abilities to their max. And then find that you fail, or you are failing, and see what happens. That's when the miracles come. No kidding. To experience miracles, you need that formula. And it's part of the 50 ways. Now, I'm going to get into that part. Yes, I know. That's what tonight's show is about. Okay, I'm going to get into that. The 50 ways are based upon joining together awareness in the areas where you're creating. Let's say your creation is an imagination, and you want to create some interesting piece of music as an art. Possibly it'll be a painting, or maybe a sculpture. Maybe it'll be a dance. Maybe it'll be something else. But it's in your creative imagination, in this case, that you're using it. That's the form of information. That's the energy that's moving through your particular senses in your astral body. Notice I didn't pick the physical. I'm picking something else right now. Okay, so the information comes through one, two, three, or more of the astral senses. When it hits five, you become empathic. When it hits seven, becomes super empathic, which means that you start experiencing the creation as God is experiencing it. Whoa! How does that happen? Well, because spiritual thought infiltrates the heart and crown chakras, and now you're experiencing it both as a human being and as God at the same time. But the amazing thing about it is that when you get all seven of those senses together, you are using literally all the sense that you've got at the time. It's not God's sense, no. It's God-like in the sense that you're using the seven as one. The oneness of the seven creates a state where there is virtually effortlessness to the energy moving through that particular system, which we call the astral. And the good news is that while it isn't necessary that you're going to have a perfect response, so your music may not be perfect, but the point is you're going to do as good a job as you can, provided your motive is to serve others. Now, if it's to serve yourself, you'll never get to the two senses that are God, so this whole thing wouldn't even be possible to support that kind of selfishness. But let's assume that you have included all seven senses. That means you're serving others. Effortless service can only be when the service is for the betterment of others. Okay. And it can't be personally for their sake. It has to be to develop seven senses unified in them. Same kind of thing. See how it works together? You've got to help others become more part of God, not just help them because they feel better or something. And when you get to that level, the cool thing about this is you start failing. There's some things you can really choose to do that are beyond you. And you're not punished for that. People think, well, you deserve to be punished because you should have known you can't do that. No, you can never know what you can't do. You can't know. And God knows that. So God doesn't punish you. God says, let me give you a hint. Only when you have that equation in mind, and that's the magic, that when you've got that magical equation, you're part of the 50 ways. Whoa. And you start becoming part of God. And God is loving you in return, giving you the answers magically that you could not get any other way, raising your consciousness, raising your awareness, and at the same time getting help from others who are part of the system. Wow. And some of those others may even not be human. They may be beyond human. Or they may be below human. But you get help because the life around you responds by giving what you can, what it can, to help you. Starting to make sense what the show's title is, The 50 Ways of God to Be Your Lover. You starting to see what I'm talking about? It's not magic. No. It's spiritual. It's the parts of religion when they talk about miracles that they're trying to describe, but they don't have necessarily the science that I'm talking about anyway. But regardless, it's the same thing. Okay. Wow. Now, for a lot of people, this might be a new idea. Does that mean that it in some way should be, we'll say, suspicious, or people should be suspicious about it, or reject it, or think that, you know, well, who came up with that one? The thing to do here is to challenge it by trying it. The logic of a system where there's doubt that is severe enough, we'll say, for people to conclude that God does not exist, the logic of that system would be what I just said has to fail and has to be hogwash, unless there's such a thing as God. So if you want to prove to yourself in one way or another that God exists and you have been having trouble, I just give you an answer. Now, some people are also going to say, yeah, you give me an answer, but all I have to do is do all this crap. I don't want to have to get off my butt and work like this and do all this stuff. I want to sit around, watch television, and forget about it. Okay, but then don't complain about having doubts about God. You might complain about having doubts about yourself, but not about God. The only way you can know God is to become part of it. And this is the way I suggest. But you're suggesting we become part of God by failure. Well, you can become part of God by success too. I'm just saying that most people don't buy into the system of becoming God by part of success. They really don't. because they find that to be ludicrous. Oh, well, I've got to be almost perfect to even know who or what God is. And I agree with you. I agree with them. That is true, that you could become part of God that way, and you certainly would get to understand God better that way. Yet, the system is designed so you can get to know God through failure. And that is a pretty amazing system. One which, if you think about it, is one of those true miracles just by understanding how the system works. I'll tell you when I first came up with this. It was in the late 70s. I've had a number of experiences in a thing called an isolation tank. And I was starting to read a bunch of books in Eastern philosophy and metaphysics and theology and just all kinds of stuff. And it came to me that the system as I had concluded God supposedly was all goofed up and wasn't right, based upon various, you know, religious viewpoints and things like that. And then also what came to me was that the system was designed so that God could grow from its own creations. I came to that conclusion about that time or a little earlier than that. And then I also began to realize the sense thing by having some out-of-body experiences in some other dimensions, most of them astral, a few etheric, physical. But the thing is that I began to see that the senses were meant to do this remarkable part of the whole equation, and how they started to come together at different parts of different dimensions. So I started to see the 50 ways, at least part of the 50 ways. It was this, the discovery of that in a true experiential sense, that led me to the final conclusions that I'm speaking to you about today. And I had a few at that time in the next 10 years or so experiences of actually extending myself to these high levels of creation and failing. Yeah, and actually saying, oh, I said I didn't make it, I didn't see this, I didn't understand that. And whoops, things are not going the way I like them, and a lot of things come crashing down and that stuff. And then the miracle, or miracles, occurred, and I said, oh, wow, that didn't ever happen before. And it started to dawn on me that that's how it works. Now, also, I don't want you to think I prayed for success on my part or for a remedy from God after I failed. I didn't. Because if you do, that is meaning you're doing it for the wrong motive. Remember, motive is a critical element here. If you're doing it to serve others, and if you're praying for them, that's fine. But if you're praying for yourself, well, gee, I wish I had more sense and I could do better, really, then instead of getting God's assistance, God says, oh, so that's it. You're spiritually ambitious, are you? You want to be helped because of some extrinsic value to yourself, huh? Well, forget that. Yeah, then things tend to accelerate karmically and more bad things happen. Not things you don't deserve because they're still karma, it's just that it happens a little faster. So if you want to turn up the bad dial and get more suffering, do a little prayer just for your own personal edification and see what happens. Instead of saying a little prayer for others, you say a little prayer for yourself and you're likely going to get kicked in the butt. I mean, seriously, and that's another way to find God, because there you go. If I'm right, then there you go. So as an experiment, I wouldn't do too much of this. I guess you could do, you know, you could say, well, just to see if this guy's really on the ball and if he's a screwball or not, I'm going to try praying about getting be rich all of a sudden. Oh, I'll get all this stuff. And I'm going to pray that I get more power and people think I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. And then see what happens. Yep. And the anti-miracles will start happening is what's going to happen. Now, don't do too much of that, because you open the door to the dark side. And unless you're doing it completely as an experiment, you're really detached, although there, it may not have the same amount of badness connected to it if you do it that way, but the results will be probably not too bad, and you're not likely to be inundated by possessions and darkness and that sort of stuff. But, I mean, if you seriously get into it, watch out. That could be a serious door that you don't want to open because real bad things can happen to you and to your consciousness. All right, so, cool. This is cool. That this whole thing really has some system to it, that you really can find God in 50 ways. And why is there 50 ways? I better tell you that before the first part of the show goes by, because I'm trying to define everything. There's 7 ways, and there's 7 different dimensions of time and space in which a life form can grow within and can discover how to use those ways to create its way into becoming more a part of God. While God, of course, is going to be helping it to do so at the same time. It's a really cool thing. So, and as you join these 49 ways, if you join them all together, the 50th way is a single way that God uses that is the huge, all-encompassing, all-one way to be God. And you can actually reach that level before you leave this universe. Wow. So there's 7 times 7, which is 49, plus 1 is 50. And for those who go beyond 21 of the ways, that's 7 times 3, they are no longer human beings. Welcome to the superhuman kingdom. Yeah, that's what happens. You've got to take the 7 from the etheric physical, 7 from the astral, and 7 from the mental. Now, the mental is kind of split, but you still have 7 technically. And those 7 ways, all joined together, 7, 7, 7, reaches 21, and then you're into Buddha consciousness. And when you have Buddha consciousness, it's controlled. It means you can just sense at will, so to speak. Doesn't dawn on you once in a blue moon, but it actually happens pretty regularly. And you have to be doing this for the purpose of serving others, of course. You're never going to get that far if you aren't, anyway. Then the result is that the 21 becomes the new sense of Buddha, Bodhi, and that sense is always joined together from the 21. So you can say that it never is a separated sense. Any part of Bodhi, although there's 7 ways of Bodhi, but any one part of Bodhi has all 21 joined together. So the 3 lower bodies of the human being now become a vehicle of expression and service to the person who's superhuman. They don't really sense the existence of God from the lower 21. They sense it only through their Buddhic sense. They use the 21 to serve. Could be teaching, it could be anything else. And when that is going on, they are doing it in an effortless way, meaning that they do not employ the use of energy. I know that sounds strange. Instead, the energy becomes light, and it is the enlightened element that will say fully emulates through the forms, the 3 bodies, the lower bodies, and those bodies become light. And then the remaining kinds of energy, which now I have to do with Buddhic energies, comes from both the earth and the sun through us. Some people call it pranic, with kundalinis, or sometimes they call it chi. It's one of the 3 kundalinis. And the result is that the energy is no longer actually doing any work. You know, normally we talk about energy and work as being synonymous. In Newtonian physics, that's true. But when you reach the level of light, light doesn't actually do work. Light joins time and space, which means that work is no longer required to accomplish any particular movement. Therefore, all movement takes place in no time at all. Now, it's a little hard. I know I'm going into some physics that may not be easy to understand. Okay, maybe I shouldn't go too much further with that. I'm going to lose everybody unless I really into this stuff. But that's the bottom line, is that you reach this effortless place where there is no longer the normal ways that we think of creating using quote-unquote energy. So you don't use things, forms, and you don't use energy moving through forms or around forms. You're using the enlightenment form, or virtue sometimes, as it is sometimes referred to. You're using virtue to be creative, and when you create through virtue, you create more virtue directly, both in others, their senses and bodies, and in all of everything else that comes into the experience of the creation. And the bottom line is that there is no work employed. Therefore, there's no forces. There can't be if there's no work. And there's no heat. It's sometimes referred to as cold light or cold enlightenment, cool enlightenment. And everything becomes, again, effortless. Interesting process. And as far as God is concerned, the reason you can then experience God simultaneously is that the process of time ceases to be a problem. If time is not separated from space, then your sense is no longer separated from God. Let me say that again. I know. People are going with their eyes in the air. Oh, no, what the hell is he talking about? All right. Yeah. If all of this means that you're not separating, but you're joining all of your senses with time and space because they're really becoming one thing, and it doesn't take any time to do anything in, that's part of the equation, right? And no effort is involved, then you can become part of God, wow, and sense God, and everything else, by the way, that God is sensing, that's involved in your creation, while you're also doing the creation. And that's a hard one to understand, right? Because we aren't used to that kind of sensing for the most part. Human beings are used to this time separation and space separation thing. And so they sense, and then they go on to experience, and then they go on to think, and then they sense some more. You know, it's kind of like that. But that isn't what I'm talking about. There was a guy named Whitehead, Alfred Whitehead. He came up with a word called concretions. And that's what's happening. You're bringing together the experience of God, of being God, while you're doing creations that are so virtuous that they equal the ability for you to create or exceed it, if God's helping you. And the results are this magic enlightenment of your own form and all those who are experiencing your creation at the same time, and you're experiencing more and more of God at the same time, while God experiences all that you've created. And not just in the past or present, but also in the future. So God is actually experiencing this to the end of time as you're doing it. You don't reach at that point until you're way up in consciousness, but God does. So God is experiences much greater than ours, but nonetheless we get to experience God at whatever level we're capable of creating, a little bit more sometimes if God helps us. Okay. I know. Whew! Let's take a break. Yeah, I give you 2.5 minutes to cool off after all that. I filled it in, didn't I? All right. Again, I'm pushing the limits here. Some people are going to, you know, probably say, I just got to sit here and think for 30 seconds and nap on nothing. Too much. Okay, well, just cool down. And I'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel. Kind of. About romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Well, we're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I was just talking to Don, who has been helping us. He's the manager of the station. He's been helping us to get our sound improved, and we were working on that. A couple of weeks ago, it was really terrible. I know we had some problems. But we're getting there. Just bear with us. It's a process. And maybe we'll get some help from God. Who knows? Because it's working better tonight than it has been. So, and I got a new pair of headset coming because my headphones are like 15 years old. And I think they're getting tired, the brand I'm using is a Sony. I tried a bunch of other ones. These are the ones that are comfortable, really. Some of them might work better, but I don't think I can use them for 2.5 hours or more. So, one of the first things with this equipment is you got to be able to sit here and use it for a long time if you have a long enough show. And so I got a new pair of Sonys. They were on sale for 60% off. I thought that was a good buy. Today was the day to buy them. And we'll see how they turn out. They'll be here before the next show. I hope they are as comfortable as the ones I'm wearing. I'm kind of used to these guys, but I think they're getting tired, And they squeak once in a while in my ear, which is kind of strange, just moving around. It's not electronic, it's just a kind of mechanical squeak. I don't think you guys can hear it. Anyway, back to what I was talking about. Your brain coming back to reality. I covered a lot of stuff there after the 40 minutes. It was just cranked in there, right? All right. So how does this apply? I mean, we got 50 ways, we got 50 different, 49 senses that can become the 50th, which is the sense of God itself. And why did God do this? Let's talk about that. I mean, holy macaroni! At first it starts with just 3 parts of its mind, the next thing you know, there's 49 parts. Well, that's enough to give anybody a headache, right? That's a lot of parts. And how come? Where does this all tend to lead to? And kind of the answer to this is it's fascinating, at least as far as I can tell, in that you have a system that is meant to give challenge to creation itself. So God didn't say, well, gee, let me make it as easy as possible on all my creation so this can go very smoothly. God said, let's challenge myself and all of my creations. The reason it challenges itself is because it has to maintain incredible levels of humility and allow all of his creations to just screw up. But at any rate, it does this because the challenge is part of the creation. The two go hand in hand. And so if you want a highly creative system, it's not going to be, by our standards, easy. As a matter of fact, it's going to be killer hard. Okay, so where does God then go with that concept? Well, it starts where we are right now. Talk about hard. It makes the energy part of the equation so incredibly dense that the energy itself no longer follows thought, which is the what God used to. You know, God says, oh, energy follows thought. That sounds cool. But it makes a realm, only one, the etheric physical, where we exist right now, into a place where energy does not follow thought, for the most part, and except at the super, super small level, which we call the quantum level, way, way down there small, does energy even begin to follow any thought. And that's why we have so much confusion in the physical world. For you, all of you who are physicists out there, you might appreciate this. In the physical part of the realm, because there is the schism between the very, very super small being able to slightly follow thought and the rest of energy, when it gets any much bigger than a quark or a very small subatomic particle, energy does not follow thought. It follows the thought of itself, but no thought outside of itself. The thought of itself we call gravity. And so consequently, with the exception of the super small, gravity controls rather than any kind of other thought process. And so we have two different laws of physics applying. Whether you're super, super small, in which case you have the quantum model, which is the way the whole universe works outside of the physical, where energy, to some extent, follows thought. The first person to discover this was a physicist named Heisenberg, following some of the principles of Max Planck, and Planck, some people call it Planck. Planck is a more German pronunciation. Was a genius mathematician physicist who, 25 years beforehand, said, you know what? This is the way physics is grounded. What it's grounded on is this thing called quantum physics. I don't even think he called it that at that time, but it is based upon the capricious nature of probable existence, which comes from something other than the gravitational laws of Newton and the laws of the macro universe. So the quantum physics laws have all been proven to be extremely accurate. And then the standard laws of physics, as long as you're dealing with big things, are also pretty accurate, very accurate. And that's called the standard model of physics. The problem is the two types of physics confound a lot of physicists because they don't exactly support each other. As a matter of fact, they kind of crash and burn when you try to use them in very much the same system at the same time, like you might find in a black hole, and very goofy kinds of mathematical outcomes occur. But that's only because on a quantum level, you have the capricious nature of the particle itself controlling itself and also responding to the thoughts of beings in other dimensions outside of the etheric physical, which includes God itself. And then you have the rest of the energy in the universe, which is a great deal of it, but not as much as you may think, controlling the macro side of things, mostly through gravity. So you have this two kinds of physics going on at the same time in the same part of the universe. And I think God must have had a great day when it thought of this incredibly confusing and contradictory model to support the basement, so to speak, of its great creation. Because it is in this model that the quandaries of, we'll call it, logic and reason start to become difficult to follow. And it's also here where the mind of humans is most tested. So that mind is limited, and in its limitation, it is forced to start dealing with its doubts about its creator and many other things. And it's fascinating because it also is through the solution, which I have proposed already, but and some other people have too, that people are able to get out of this crisis, which really upsets a lot of math and a lot of parts of science. Now, many people that are scientists simply say, okay, well, I don't have a problem with it because in the macro world, I use standard model physics, which is called the physics, sometimes of relativity, Einsteinian physics, but it's much more than that. Some people call it particle physics on a macro scale. Others refer to it as the physics of the physics of experimental design, or physics that you can prove by experience. And then they are okay with that because it's separated from the physics of quantum physics, in which there has to be a certain, we'll say, a certain point where there's sudden changes in states of energy. In other words, there's packages that are packaged by the mind of God in some respect, and those packages allow only jerky kinds of changes, not a smooth change from one place to another, but a sudden jump from one state to another. And within that concept, people are able to accept it in physics because that concept is actually proven to be the most accurate, because the states are so segregated, they're so exact in their proportions. But they accept it because as long as you don't try to join the two, there is an exacting level that makes it easier for them to do certain kinds of, we'll say, mathematical calculations that turn out to be true. The problem is there's no experiential realm, because if you get into the experiential realm, the thought of the experimenter affects the quantum factors, and especially the super small quarks and other things. And the result is that you don't any longer have a system which can be experimented with. Because if the experimenter changes the experiment, then the results cannot be independently determined, and you can't end up with validity of things. So quantum physics is the physics, in many respects, that is metaphysics, meaning it's beyond the ability to prove through experimental design what it is. Yet it's accepted, which is cool. Everybody's okay with that, in its own right, because it's more accurate. That's strange. And the less accurate, the standard model, is the one that's used to determine big things. Like if you wanted to go from point A to B, you'd probably use the standard model and not quantum physics. But if you wanted to understand how a super small computer works, you better start using quantum physics. Or certain other really important parts of waves and how waves interfere with particles, and certain kinds of intricate chemistry experiments that change relationships of states of atoms and things, especially when you get into nuclear physics and things. So ultimately, it's critical to have quantum physics, even though it doesn't allow us to do the kind of experiments that you can do in the standard model. All right, all that aside, now, how come God made a system like this? I mean, this is just fascinating, but it's okay. And the reason for it is it has to do with the two parts of God's mind actually kind of involving themselves with the third part. Quantum physics involves creation along with consciousness attempting to balance itself. It's like an equation that needs a certain level of balance. And it ignores, for the most part, the input of, we'll call it, sense in its own reactions. So most of the quantum physical aspects of the universe involve the equation of trying to balance, we'll call it, elements of light, but also another way of saying it's trying to balance creation with consciousness so that light can exist and enlightenment is possible. This is hard for us to realize. Stephen Hawking wrote a couple of interesting articles related to one of the books on it, too. He didn't quite get the real meaning of what he wrote, but he nonetheless discovered some of this stuff. And so when you look at this from that standpoint, these two parts have to balance themselves out. And God says, if you want to understand me, I'm going to make it the most difficult you could possibly do because I'm going to eliminate the sense. I'm going to eliminate the sense in half of the physics you're going to use in order to find me. Now, why would God do that? Well, you see, it's like this. God doesn't want us to be able just to develop our sense, like going into a gym every day and make our sense better and better and better, so we can discover God and prove to ourselves its existence. That would be too easy. As a matter of fact, it would be silly easy to God. God instead says, this is the way I'm going to set this whole experiment up for those who come to the physical world to learn about me, God. And that I really love you, and that you can contribute and give back to me as well. This is what you're going to need to do. And part of the physical universe that you live in, that's the part we're in right now, I'm making quantum physics the supreme model. And that part, you can only find me by enlightening yourself through service and being focused away from your little self. If you do that, again, I will reward you, and part of the reward comes from quantum physics, in that you will become enlightened without having to use the sense or senses for your own edification and gratification. So that part you can eliminate from the equation. You will have to use your senses for the benefit of others, but you will ignore your senses for what it means to you and how it affects you. As long as you do that, I've created a physics for you that you have to live in because that's going to be a part of the physical world called quantum physics. And it goes on into the rest of the universe too, but I'll explain how it changes there. And but you're going to be unfortunately hindered, not helped, by this reality that it only comes from balancing your thought to the point where humility, which comes from this beautification of the two sides, creation and consciousness being one, consciousness is love. It's another way of saying it. So when you love God as much as God loves you, you also love God's creation, which is life itself. You give to life as you give to God. The feedback to that goes through the quantum physical model, and you instantly become enlightened without having to use any sense for yourself. And the result is, result is, because of quantum physics, you do not have to. Do not have to be part of the force model, the model of using up energy and using time to accomplish anything. It's what I said at, of course, the end of the last part of the show, where you truly have entered into the effortless realm. So it's because of quantum physics, and part of our mind is working using quantum physics, that this part of God that I alluded to and described in the last segment now actually is able to function. If it wasn't for quantum physics, that part of God would not be disclosable to us while we were physically alive. And it's when we are able to use that part of God through the formula that I gave you in the last segment that we are truly becoming quantum physical beings. And that means we're going to have jumps in consciousness. We're going to have kind of a smooth change. We're going to have jumps in sacrifice, jumps in, we'll say, every part of our growth. It will be asymmetrical to some extent as well. And yet, in the end of the process, we will be far more conscious, but also far more creative and in step together. And when we exceed our senses, it won't bother us because we continue to become enlightened as a gift from God, as our creator, by the principles of quantum physics. Pretty remarkable stuff. Now, does that exclude the standard model, and does that mean that we're no longer part of the macro universe? No. It doesn't mean that at all. It just means that outside of the world that we experience as part of the standard model, which is the macro universe, where energy is all around us and we're using this or that thing and accomplishing this or that from whatever we're doing, that's separate from our enlightenment. It's not contingent upon how much or how effective we are in using energy. Doesn't mean we can't use energy, and doesn't mean we won't necessarily have to in some of our creations, because we will. But at the same time, we have a new leveling issue that allows us to step aside from the controlling issues which seem so profound around us and convince so many people to doubt God, and to lose the doubt by realizing through this amazing quantum physical principle that we can sidestep. And we can be part of God, we can grow with God, we can grow our consciousness. We can become enlightened without having to be part of the physical system during that growth. We still are part of it in service to us, we're still part of it a lot of the rest of the time. But the enlightenment part can be wholly separate. And this is where we call miracles occurring. So I'm trying to lead us into a scientific understanding of something that I said was very metaphysical, and still is, at the beginning of the show. The 50 ways are still there, because we're still joining our senses together. And that allows us to not only to experience the two parts of God's mind on a erratic and somewhat, we'll say, inconsistent level that quantum physics applies. But eventually, we can reach outside of the physical world and into a consciousness much higher, where ultimately quantum physics is controlled by thought, our thought, and then we become the great magicians. We can perform miracles as well. We can instantly appear and disappear any place we want. We could, at will, change the relationship of time and space and energy to itself, creating almost anything we choose, and no time at all, if that's what's needed. So ultimately, We have that as an option, and we will grow that way in using the 50 ways. But here in the physical world, we have the great, let's say, grace of God allowing us the luxury of being able to enlighten ourselves when we're not using all of the 50 ways or all even of the 7 ways in the physical world. So even before our bodies are unified, we can experience a good deal of God. That's the good news. And it's because God made the basement a place where things are very different than they are any other place in the universe. It's only here that gravity causes this shift in physics. And things do not happen just as human beings. They're pretty good thinkers, as they think. Because energy, while it does follow thought, it only follows thought that's greater than its own. And gravity is so strong that, for the most part, gravity controls energy, not an individual human being's thought. Now, what if everybody on a planet thought a certain way? Well, that's a pretty good lot of thought if you have, like, billions of people. That could change the equations, and you could have a reversal of what I said. We are so far from that, though, that we're not going to probably see it on Earth for a very long time. It already occurs in a number of other worlds, but they're called sacred planets. And part of the sacredness is the ability to do this thing that I'm talking about. And we just don't have it here, so... to us, it's a foreign idea and thought. All right, well, that being aside, so God has the basement kind of rearranged and allows us to, we'll say, live a really torturous, difficult life, but one that we can still reach enlightenment long before we reach unification of sense. Now, the enlightenment isn't complete, but at least it's something. And we wouldn't have that if God hadn't designed the basement to be the specific way. So we have a lot to appreciate about this system that in science is so well isolated and hidden from what it's really about. I don't think you'll find too many physicists explaining quantum physics the way I have described it tonight. All right, so we have now an interesting model. What about the rest of the universe? I mean, I've just talked about the basement here. That's the 7th dimension, the lowest dimension, where the majority of what's taking place has to do with etheric physical energy. Now, the etheric part of the energy is electromagnetic, and it follows the same principles, but it's less affected by gravity than it is the physical. So in the electromagnetic range, we can see another separation between the energy that is matter, that's affected grossly by gravitation, and the energy which is not matter, but is what we call free energy. And it's still... matter is composed of dense energy that has little freedom. It's trapped by the gravity of itself, and it's in solid form. Electromagnetic energy is energy that is not in solid form. It is not controlled by its own density, because it's extremely non-dense, and it is actually controlled by other energies, and sometimes by form, if the form is large enough, like the sun or a planet Earth. And it has within it some unique qualities. Let's talk about those etheric qualities now. Well, the first is that for brief periods of time, relatively brief, some forms of life, including human, can maintain its consciousness, sometimes in better balance, with the etheric energy. And to the dense form, which doesn't, it blocks that effect as much. So the result is if you're in a etheric form, you can't stay there very long without losing some significant amounts of consciousness. Or if you're in a dense physical form, you still have your etheric form, but the dense physical kind of keeps things more stable, and so consciousness remains more stable. All right, so people who are etheric, even if they're doing out-of-body etheric travel, if they stay doing that for very long, they will have a diminished sense and a reduction in consciousness. If they do it for a very long time, they'll become ghost-like, which means that they don't almost understand who or what they are doing, and they may get entrapped in that form and not go on to the astral world where they should be moving on to. Luckily, most people don't do that, and they just go and go into the astral world. But a few do, and we call them ghosts. Now, how is the etheric part, electromagnetic part, different in physics from the dense physical? Well, if we were to examine the electromagnetic aspects of, say, atoms and other things, we would find that waves and field theory apply much stronger to this type of form. It's more formless than form, and it has no matter to it. So when you're in that particular realm, the quantum physical principles start to change. A thing called the quantum constant actually is not so constant, because it actually it becomes larger. Now, what happens when you enlarge the quantum constant? Well, it's the amount, one way to look at it, the quantum constant, the amount that energy follows thought. Gravity is less, and the thought that is surrounding etheric energy is much more effective in having the energy follow it. So we have an effect on etheric energy much more than we have an effect on physical. Some people who are very good minds and have some other great talent could actually change computers and other electromagnetic things, TV sets or whatever, more readily than they could physical objects, because it's easier to do so based upon what I'm explaining tonight in physics. And there's a lot more to it than that. The etheric part is really the part that has the chi energy, the thing that keeps life alive, and it flows through it. If it doesn't, if the chi doesn't flow through it, then a thing called pranas, which is another kind of etheric energy, cannot keep life going within the form. Now, why is that? How come that kind of thing is going on? Well, in order for life to maintain itself, it has to have these two kinds of energy, one coming from the earth, another coming from the sun, moving through the form on an instant and constant basis that causes the form to be able to withstand the challenges of the environment and maintain its consciousness. If it can't do that, then the consciousness slides outside of the form and moves usually into the next, eventually into the next dimension in time and space. It may move from the dense physical into the etheric for a short time after the physical dies, but then it moves into the astral. The form is therefore a critical element, and etheric energy is, we'll say, more changeable. It has the ability to stay alive longer in the confines of being killed if the physical body were killed. And it could, because of quantum physics, be around for a long time, but consciousness slips away in that process, and the person may become almost not there, so to speak. It's unfortunate, but it's true. And they could become possessed by beings from the lower parts of the astral world as well. And And things that live in the etheric world that are nasty things, there aren't too many of them left, but they are there, could also take advantage of someone in that condition. That's all called possession, and it's bad news for people if they are possessed. Now, what's going on with the quantum physical thing then? How come if the quantum consciousness is getting larger, why is that causing a problem then? Well, it's larger, yes, but it doesn't have the stability coming from the material side room that causes stability. So it's very changeable, easily challenged, adversely affected by possessions and all kinds of other types of etheric energies which compete with it and maybe cause disturbances in it. And there's all kinds of etheric energy around us these days. I mean, all the electromagnetic sources are considerable. I'm not just talking about sunspots now. I'm talking about, you know, with wind, solar winds coming in and striking us. I'm talking about TV sets. I'm talking about radio. I'm talking about, you know, radar. I'm talking all kinds of stuff going on around us. And accelerated particles. Most of it's in wave form. Now, what does it mean? But wave is different than a particle. Particle is a very discrete quantity and type of energy. It is convertible into a wave and back again. When it's a wave, it's non-discrete, but it has rhythm. You know, I've got rhythm, you know. So when particles become waves, they have a nice rhythm to them. When they are particles, they have a feature that they lose the rhythm, but they gain, we'll say, a kind of jumpy form of quantumness, or a certain amount of deliberateness of quantity in the way that they exist. And between these two, between the wave and the particle form of etheric energy now, the two are much more easily back and forth than matter. Matter has a minimal amount of back and forthness between its wave state and its particle state. But etheric or electromagnetic energy in the physical world does not. It's kind of like, woo, to right now I could be a wave and I could be a particle. As a matter of fact, once the particle becomes part of light, then it becomes a photon. The photon can move back and forth between being a wave and a particle instantly based upon whether or not there's harmony between it and the surrounding matter that is forcing it to move through it. So if you take some slit slack on a piece of paper or a piece of wood or metal, and you shine light through it, sometimes the particles act like particles, and sometimes they act like waves, whether or not there's harmony in the way that they can move. That's pretty strange, but it's proven. You can prove this pretty easily. It's all kind of interesting experiments to do this. And so we know from actually experiments that this is really going on with physics. And why is that? Because a thing called the quantum constant is actually larger. Now, most physicists don't know. Some do. There's a few German physicists that have recently found this out in the last 20 or 30 years. That the quantum physics principles, the thing, the most important thing is the quantum constant is actually getting bigger. Now, the bigger the constant, the easier it is for the particle to become a wave and the wave to become a particle. And the more it is, we'll say, less affected by the energy around it. That's why, in electromagnetic form, it's much easier for particles to become waves and vice versa, not so much in the physical world. In the physical world, the experiments turn out to be very, very narrow ranges where everything takes place. As you move into the higher energy accelerated principles of the electromagnetic band in the etheric world, that's not so much so. It's just the opposite. And things move around back and forth without much problem. Also, the thought of people can start affecting etheric energies, not nearly as much as you can in the astral world. Don't get me wrong, it's not even close. But a little bit, so that we can notice the difference, and the speed of light changes. Somewhere around 2.1, 2 times faster than it is by our definition of the speed of light in the physical world. Wow. And they actually did experiments that proved at certain levels, not quite the full energy levels of extreme gamma particles and beyond, but slightly lower than that, they got 1.7 times the speed of light in these same experiments in Germany about 20 years ago. Amazing. How come nobody knows this? Well, they kind of do in an isolated way. Somebody read about it and said, oh, yeah, they did this and they did that, and they found that light was moving through certain things at this level compared to, but they didn't understand what the results. You know, if you don't have a working model to understand the experimental results, you don't necessarily actually have the concept of what's going on. You just have some results. All right. So, tonight we're getting a dose of metaphysics with physics, huh? Well, yeah, that's the way it works sometimes. All right, so we got, God's got this whole system. Now, I've only got through, I'm not even through the basement yet, but we're getting there. Okay, so the basement has two floors on it. The lower floor is called matter, and the higher floor is called electromagnetic energy, or sometimes etheric energy. And those two floors work together. It is the floor that is the higher floor that determines the structure, eventual structure of the way energy will take, we'll say, the appearance in matter, not vice versa. So what we call matter is the result of a pattern established between the particle and its wave in etheric or electromagnetic energy. The etheric form determines ultimately the structure of the form of the physical. Whoa. And because there's a time dilation difference between the two, things that take place in the etheric world can take hours to manifest in the physical. Ooh, yeah, sometimes like almost a whole day. A long time, it can take that much. Depends upon how high the intensity is of the etheric energy. If it's at the gamma level, which is referred to as a certain very high level of energy, that takes longer than at the lower level. So the higher the energy level in the etheric world, the longer the time before it will manifest as a effect on the form in the matter that it is connected to or part of. Interesting stuff. All right. What, and then there's free form electromagnetic energy. It's around, it's all over the place, which is having some effect on matter, but it is not necessarily the controlling element to the structure of a specific form, because it's not incorporated within the form, but it affects it from the outside in. It still has an effect, though. So, yeah, if you live by telephone lines and the low-frequency energy is coming out of those, it can have some effect on you. And there's no question if you live next to a nuclear reactor, especially if the shielding isn't too good, there's going to have a major effect on you. Like, you may fall apart in 40 minutes or so. Because those energies are so excited, and they move at speeds right through the form side of what we are. They literally go right through us, that they disturb atoms, which get destroyed or hurt in molecules that are part of ourselves. And then it kills us or harms us. It changes our genetic structure. This is all done because of the metaphysics and physics that I'm describing to you. And most of it's related to quantum physics. Because it's that small stuff that's going on. Now, if you were to convert some of this into a black hole, which is big stuff going on, you have gravity starting to do wacko things to the etheric realm. What does that mean? Well, in the etheric realm, we know that as you get up into the gamma radiation and even super gamma, which is where black holes work, by the way, you have some strange stuff happening. The forms, literally, of the universe become disconnected completely from the etheric energy. And the etheric energy becomes connected to the, so starts connecting to the next couple dimensions of time and space, which is the astral and mental. And eventually beyond that, even into, believe it or not, all the way to the atmic dimension, a huge amount of time and space. Depends on how active and big the black hole is. And what you have is that new forms of light are being produced that goes, that takes what is the electromagnetic energy and converts it into different types of light that are producing white holes in other dimensions of time and space. And at the same time, the physical form that enters the black hole is disrupted to the point where there is no more physicalness. So there is no more matter. All the matter is converted by the black hole's supergravitational energy into electromagnetic energy. But when you convert gravity into electromagnetic energy, you change the quantum constant, and then you get all the other facts I just said about white holes and everything else. And that's what black holes are. They're basically converting the parts of God in these dimensional lower elements into higher parts of God. They're recycling, eventually, energies in the universe, taking some of the stuff in the densest parts of the universe and making it available for energy in much higher amounts. Make sense? Yeah, it does to me completely, but I guess some people may not agree with it. All right, so... And we still haven't gotten out of the basement. So, and I better look at my time here, and I'm not going to get out of the basement very easily if I don't move ahead here pretty darn quickly, you know, because we're going to lose our time. I'm pretty much out of time, but I think I'm going to go a little bit longer. I'm letting the engineer know. It's my cue to him. If he doesn't mind, I'll go a little bit longer. All right, so what happens is when we move out of all of this stuff that I was just talking about, well, eventually, in each dimension of time and space, you're moving the quantum constant much higher, much, much higher, huge amounts, so that when you get to the astral world, you can creatively imagine something that instantly appears. You could disappear yourself and reappear someplace you've been before in the astral world, and it's no time at all. Literally, you could just, a few seconds at most, depends on where you are. And you can reappear, by our standards, 100,000 miles away. That's pretty amazing. That's a big, big change from here. I don't know if anybody's doing that these days here, but, I mean, you can do that there, and most people can do that. It uses up some of your sense if you aren't doing it to serve others. That's one of the disadvantages. But it is possible to do it, for sure. There's no question about that. Eventually, collectively, you're starting to join senses into light, and light is a big part of God, and you're making yourself into God by enlightening who and what your quote-unquote form side is, the third part of God's mind, with the two parts of creation, creativity, and consciousness being kept balanced. And you balance all three parts of God's mind, you have found the solution to the 50 ways of being God and being part of God's love while you give to God at the same time. The love of God and your God match each other. When they do match each other, you're done with life as we understand it. In this universe, you actually go on to a different universe. You experience the universe as it was and as it is completely, and as it will be in a virtual sense, from your perspective of consciousness and ability at that time. And these levels of perfection and non-perfection that exist at that time. So everybody gets to experience a godlike experience, but God gets the big picture, because all those that do experience this contribute to God, and God grows much more quickly than the rest of the individuals. But still, everybody is an individual. Everybody shares it in amazingly well. And the process is one of total and amazing, amazing ways of becoming God. Just amazing. And God becoming more itself. And everyone that does it not because they're forced to, not because someone's intervening and making it so, but because they create themselves into this position by their own choices, or lack thereof, for those who are the laggards, but they eventually will come around. It's an amazing system, one of great beauty, one of tremendous, tremendous relief to those that doubt, provided you test. You remember what I said at the beginning of the show, how you can test it. I might only have time to go back over that now. But use that. Use that as your true measure, and you will come up to an amazing and great place in the process. This is the thing that I find so remarkable about the entire system. It allows us to reach what we'll call the monumental places that very few people can ever really say they ever get to. Okay, so let me go through the process step by step. I'm giving you the big picture, and now I'm going to try to break it down so that you can truly get there. And I'll start with the etheric physical again, so that we got what we're here for. The general principle is to not become bogged down by the belaborment of the gross aspects of form. What does that mean? Well, we don't want to put ourselves into a position where, by our own, we'll say, stupidity and lack of consciousness, the form of things around us becomes the important element of existence. This is a good day for that, huh? Black Friday, you know. Why is this so important? Well, it's a lesson that must be learned by experience, and God doesn't help us with that lesson by saying, well, here, I'll bestow on you this new consciousness and you realize this. Because we would doubt God more, not less, if that were given to us in that way. The way to overcome the doubt is to exceed our own abilities with the form nature. The form nature causes us to be continually tripped up because we can't create as much as there is gravity. The gravity is overwhelming, and the ability for us to create is underwhelming. So we're in a constant state of being under pressure, of, we'll say, battling the consequences of a high-gravity place where almost none of our thought has any, the slightest iota of an effect on the material surroundings. And what trips us up is the desire, coming from our astral nature, to have more form, which is the dense physical, because our personalities fear death and think that having more things is a way of reinforcing us to stay alive. Well, there's a slight truth to that. I guess if you're talking about food, shelter, and, you know, having water and that kind of stuff. But beyond that, not true. So you can't say, well, gee, well, I just had a new car and some new clothes and stuff like that, I would live longer. No. As a matter of fact, the truth is, there's a reverse of that position. The dense forms of things, material things, when excessive, and for the purpose not of creation for the benefit of others, but the reverse to have and just to have more of, becomes a detriment to the chi energy in the prana that's keeping us alone, and it causes, just as we act with the form to hold on to it, it holds on to us, and it holds on to the energy that's moving through us, which keeps us alive. Remember, if the energy can't move through us effortlessly, we are dying in a state of becoming more and more ill and a state of falling apart. The form parts of us don't maintain themselves, as I said an hour ago on the show. So ultimately, the only way to stay alive is to not hold on to things for the purpose of having things. That's also true of money, which is compressed time and energy. If you're holding on to your money for the purpose just of having the money, it's no different than buying a bunch of things. It has the same model on it. So look at your bank account and ask yourself what you're using that stuff for, that money for, and then you'll come up with how long, it's a model of how long you actually will stay healthy and live. I'm not going to make any friends with that statement anyway. But it's a true statement. It's definitely a true statement. Use your money to be creative at the maximum level that you can possibly be. This usually involves, if it's true that if you're spiritually involved, you're probably working with others to do this. But in any case, use it for those purposes. Even if it's to give it to someone who has more sense than you, that's better than just holding on to it yourself, because in either case, you're going to, but it's better if you also involve yourself as much as possible to be assisting in whatever's happening. But in either case, what you want is to not gravitate by having huge amounts of money or huge amounts of things, because though, and not use them for creation in a spiritual sense, because those things are what cause you to age and to get diseased and die. Whoa. All right, so God wants us to learn this lesson. So God says, go and create in the, well, of course, through our soul. Go in. The soul already understands what I'm telling you. Most people's souls are developed enough to understand this. Only very young human souls are still learning this. But most souls are, human souls, are beyond this. And they say, go create to a part of itself in the etheric physical world so that you're an extension of me as a soul, so that we can learn this principle, understand it, and use our creations to not become gravitated through the material things. So, like on Black Friday, you might buy a pair of headphones to be able to communicate with those that are listening right now so that they can understand better. And that's an okay use of the money. It's really not even my money, but we all share in the situation there. And so you look at it from that standpoint, and whoa, that makes a lot of sense, you see. But if instead you want a nice set of headphones because you just like the way they look and feel and you're going to show everybody and you want to listen to some nice music and whatever, the result may be that causes you to get ill and or worse, to age and to lose sense and eventually lose life. You see what I'm trying to explain here, as frightening as the proposition might be to those who are involved in this, which is probably most of you. Look, this is the way it works. I'm not trying to judge us. I'm trying to educate. Right? This is not preaching. I'm not trying to preach. I'm rather showing how it actually works. I'm questioning this so often, and it's a little difficult to explain it without having gone through with some of the concepts of tonight. But still, you can see the illusion that's involved here. Right? All right. So, how long does it take us to come to this realization? Hundreds of lifetimes in the physical world. You might say, well, why can't I just do it once? Well, nobody's stopping you. But remember God's principle. God's principle is go forth and create. And do so by elevating your consciousness, givingness, love at the same time, so that you give in ways that are wise and you create in ways that are godly, virtuous, enlightening, informed. And this is your calling. I created this so you can learn it for yourself. I created this so I would not interfere in most circumstances. And when I do interfere, it'll be because you have exceeded your own abilities through your own creations and your own consciousness, and then I will gift upon you what you need to move ahead further. Do all you can. Be as much me in all you are. And then I will help. Whoa. Not because you deserve it, but because it will not interfere with your doubt of me and will not interfere with your doubt of yourself. And you will continue to create at greater and greater levels as a result of that. Now, I want to mention something that's going to be a little touchy at this point. And I know there's going to be people that, you know, are going to disagree with this. You notice that God didn't say, go ahead and enter the system of the physical realm. And when you choose not to be creative, and when you choose not to be loving and as conscious as you could be, then I'll give to you a nice welfare program with free this or that and help you to move ahead, whatever that means, to have more things. That's the antithesis of what I just described as being God. I want you to understand that. So if you're talking about social justice or fairness of people getting things and having things and whatever, that's not God. That may be the present administration. That may be a bunch of people who want your votes. But it's not God. Now, I want to get to the next step in this. What happens then to the people who try and fail, but they don't try very hard? Well, they're kind of caught in the middle of this problem. God doesn't necessarily say, well, I'm going to desert you completely. You tried at some level, and therefore I'll kind of front you for a little bit, but not much. And we'll see if you get the idea that you got to try harder. You got to work harder because you still have more sense than you're using, and you can grow your consciousness by being more giving than you're doing right now. That's what some people call a social safety net, and it almost makes sense. And God also says, if a lot of the stuff that's happening to you is coming from karma from prior lifetimes, I'll look at that too, and I'll be of more assistance in some circumstances of those issues than if you are deliberately doing something in a conscious state right now. There's interesting dilemmas here. A social safety net means that people who really are in bad shape, but given the opportunity will continue to grow in some respects, maybe not as fast as we'd like, but continue to use what is given to them to be more conscious, more loving. Those people maybe deserve a bit of assistance from us and God. Remember, we can't separate these two. From us being a part of God in a social society. It's not social justice. I want you to think we're taking from those that have whatever they have, but are using it creatively to give to those who aren't being creative, that's insane. That's not only not God, it's not, that's evil. But the point is that in the process, we have people that are somewhat in between. Now, when they get into that in-between state, we need to have a social safety system that doesn't support people becoming more selfish and more dependent. It has to be a system that, step by step, they are let out of the darkness and into the light. That's the kind of system we need. Some states have created this in the United States, but the federal government, for the most part, hasn't, except on rare occasions. So that's part of what needs to be done here if we're going to move away from a dark country. Okay, enough of the social, political stuff, but you can see how this does fit together and why I am so emphatic about some of my quote-unquote political social views. Some of you thinking that, you know, it's because I am quote-unquote, he's just a big Republican guy or something. I'm not really that, but you, if you want to put me in that pigeonhole, I guess you could. The point is that what I really am saying is I'm converting some of the principles that I understand to be God, as best as I understand them, into a way of politicizing it when we're talking about it in that way. For some people, that may escape them, and they may jump to conclusions that may not be very accurate about me. Nonetheless, in the ways that I'm looking at this, we are not moving in the right directions right now here in the United States. True of also some countries in Western Europe. So it's really important, probably, more than we realize, to understand the basis of what's right and good and enlightening and what isn't. Otherwise, we don't have a good compass. The compass may be God said in the Ten Commandments or in the Bible. Those are not great compasses because they don't employ major concepts. They are mostly based upon edicts or thought forms or religious principles, but they're not based upon spiritual truths. They're not based upon concepts of metaphysics. They're missing some of the really big picture parts. And it leads, again, to doubt. And for people saying, well, if that's what God's about, who cares? You follow me, I hope. God allows us to find all this out for ourselves while we're physically alive. The lessons are very difficult to learn. They must be if it takes hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes to do it. Most of you who are listening to me have been through that, though. You're at least at the crossroads. You wouldn't have this show on if you weren't. I don't believe it. You have it on because these things I'm talking about are the issues that are inside of you you want to try to work out. I mean, I'm trying to be there as a facilitator and maybe a teacher about this stuff so that it might make more sense. All right, so again, looking at the clock here, am I going to get through all the seven? I'm still in the basement. I'll do the best I can. All right. So if you can see why this is so critical, you can start understanding how come things don't work the way you would like them to here on planet Earth. Planet Earth has much darkness, a lot of evil. I mean, the whole communistic bullshit stuff, you know, I know I'm not supposed to say it, but bull stuff is no good. No good. It's really bad. It is true evil. But if you want to follow that, then try to think about this. What about everything else I just said? Is all of that nonsense? And if it isn't true, why not experiment to prove that it's not true? I gave you some models. You can prove to yourself whether it's true or not. You could probably do this in a week or two, and it wouldn't take that much of your time and effort. So you've got some choices here. You really do. And believe me that right now most people are facing the wrong side of the fence in their choices. There must be, too, because we just elected an administration that That's the darkest one this country's ever seen. The darkest administration ever. Oh, Wilson was no great, terrific president. Don't get me wrong. He was a bigot, prejudiced beyond belief. And he was arrogant and a progressive. But, you know, even despite all of that, he was not willing to do some of the things that are presently happening. The tremendous number of deceits and lies compounded by the reason for them, which is to move us into this terribly dark place I call the social justice, communistic, socialistic world, where everything is upside down and people live for materialism. Materialism is its own disease, as we can see. All right, so we're here for that test. And that test, once you get through that test, you go, oh, freedom first. Freedom of creation. Love and consciousness second. And finally, awareness that creates beauty and supports the best that there is. That should be what you're facing and what you're moving towards. If your life doesn't demonstrate those things, then get on board and change. Get on board. Time to do something different. Okay. What about the astral world? Well, we're all going to go there. We know that. We're all headed for the astral world. Okay. The astral world works under different principles, different ways of finding God. The illusions there really have to do with desire. What is desire? Well, desire is the itch to feel a certain thing. Itch meaning that the more you scratch it, the more you're intended to go on to scratch it because it itches more. That's a typical thing when things itch, right? Scratch them, and itch more. It feels good for a while, though, just the way anything that itches does after you scratch it. But then it goes away and itches more. And that's the whole thing about desires. Now, desires are fixed or they're not fixed. If they're not fixed, they come and go. And when you grow them, they don't have a great effect on you. You grow them by giving into them. But they may come and go with some degree of frequency. The frequency thing is a big deal because the frequency of energy is much more constant. There's less particle nature to things and more frequency nature to things because the quantum physics change. And so once we start doing something that we desire and it's repeated a number of times, it becomes fixed because it has a cycle to itself and it reestablishes itself over a certain period of time, which is harmonic or fixing, and it's a wave that goes through us. And we call that a glamour. Now, what is a glamour? It's a fixed desire. It's an old word for a more physics-related term. People are affected greatly by their glamours. They have thousands, some people do. And some of them work in joint together when they have common desire. So they can be very strong. Now, glamours interfere with sense because the senses work best when they're working together in accord with the creative imagination and mental thought of the person. But when the person is more concerned about what they desire than what the accuracy of their sense is and or whether or not they're creating truth eventually in their mental processes and whether they're loving or giving to others, then they convert their desires into who they are because instead of sensing others for the sake of giving to them in wise ways, they sense themselves so that they can receive more to satiate their desires. They kind of invert the very process of existence and of living. Well, that doesn't sound like it's a good thing, and it isn't. How do you adjust for that? How do you change that kind of the ways of not seeing God? Well, there's five senses of form that make up the senses that everybody is aware of in their astral body. And those five senses have all to do with desire in some respect and how people feel. How they feel. We call feelings, you know, the preeminent element of sense in the astral body. And then there's two senses that are feelings supposedly about God if we focus about in on God in our perception. If we don't, they become about us. And then that becomes a problem because it links up with our mental thought processes. And instead of finding truth in our mental body, we find egotism, because everything's about ourselves, eventually arrogance. And then in our astral body, instead of being loving, we become selfish. And we become selfish about how we feel. So we want to constantly feel happy, fun, excited, satiated, and lacking pain and suffering, and lacking sacrifice, and lacking any sense of fear. That's what we seek when we are driven by how we feel about ourselves. People, when they go to the astral world, after living life in the physical, may have a great deal of glamour in themselves. And they may spend a good deal of the time they live in the astral world trying to get over this self-focused feeling issue, which dominates their life in numerous ways. Depending upon which senses are satiated with this feeling about wanting everything to be about themselves, then that determines where in the astral world they can actually stay conscious without falling asleep. The lower regions are for people who are very selfish about the most dense types of feelings. And it's hard to understand the density of feeling, but I'll name what they are. The densest type of feeling that has the most amount of force involved in it when it is not loving is sexual. Okay. Then the next most dense type of feeling, which deals with the sixth astral subworld, the sexual is the seventh, and this is related to our senses now. And when it relates to the sixth, it deals with excitement, and some people call it fun, but we'll just call it a high level of excitement. Very movement-orientated, but for the sake of moving, not for the sake of enlightenment. And that's excitement, and that's the sixth astral sense, and it comes from the solar plexus center. And then the fifth astral subplane is dominated by people who want to have a thought that is in accord with how they feel about anything. So in other words, they want their thoughts to be the same, mental thoughts to be the same as how they feel, and they want their mental thoughts to be logical, if not reasonable. And they then have a feeling of reduction of fear because they believe they know better than most others. And it gives them a sense of control over things that they're afraid of. You know, people that have that desire live in the fifth astral subworld, and they're dominated by that group of zillions of glamours that surround that. Okay, they tend to be more egotistical, by the way, as well. All right, so then people who live in the fourth astral subworld are very concerned about how they appear to others. They love the esteem of others, and they want to, in a social sense, to feel that others appreciate and like them, even if it's not really who they are. And they also like beauty in a superficial sense in their surroundings, and they like to have things that are harmonious in a physical astral sense to the glamours that they have that are inside them. So if their glamours are a beauty is a certain way within themselves, they want their outside environment to express the same as their inside environment. And that's the controlling factor. Instead of using their sacral centers to, in combination with some other centers, to allow them to be able to reflect on the past and to look into and understand their future, they interfere with that perception by being more concerned about how they look and how they perceive their environment, if their environment is copacetic towards their feelings and vice versa. Wow. Okay. And then finally you get to the third sense, the throat chakra, and an astral sense. And the desire there is to know a great deal about almost everything, having very high amounts of knowledge that in a material sense is as accurate as possible. Different than the people in the fifth subworld, because people in the fifth subworld don't care whether it's truthful. Strangely, the people in the third really do seek there to be a much higher level of truth in their knowledge, but they don't care if they are egotistical about it. They don't care if they have a lack of wisdom in the use of the truth, which means that they don't give it readily. It isn't well given. They only have enough truth so that they can create things in a material sense, in the astral world and elsewhere, that assist them so that they use less of their senses. Sometimes so that even those around them use less of their senses. They want to keep their senses as high as possible, no matter what the cost. In some ways, it's kind of admirable, but the sense is still for themselves and somewhat for others, but not to raise consciousness as much as it is to raise awareness. And so those folks are still not spiritual. And so they use their throat chakra in a very selfish way. Still, for a lot of glamours, if they have fixed desires to have a higher sense so they can get better information with more complete knowledge and more complete truth, but it's really a half-truth, it's not full truth. Without wisdom, it's always half-truths. And lacks the real thing of love, wisdom, because they aren't loving either, not real love. Okay, you go on to the spiritual subworlds, and you get to the heart chakra, and there people need to, instead of using their heart chakra to give in ways that they're taught in a religious sense or in some other spiritual, we'll say, discipline sense, they need to be giving in a wise way from their own creations. And that's where the difficulty lies. They want a God that helps them by telling them what to do instead of by them creating themselves. So they lack humility, which is a big problem. They doubt God because they can't find God, because God isn't like the God that they're taught, and they want to believe in. It's a tough place, but that's the second spiritual subworld. And the first spiritual subworld, they're over that part. but their glamour is that they want to create God without allowing people to be freely open to resisting that creation and to doubt it and to even fight against it and be evil. So sometimes they are overly destructive to evil, or sometimes they're just frustrated unnecessarily with the levels of evil. I have some of this myself, by the way. And so you have people who focus in wrongly on the creative side of God, because God's creative side is to mostly have a hands-off reaction, and theirs is, well, I can't be just hands off because there's all these evil dudes around here. I got to do something about them. Not in the first astral subworld, but in the lower ones, which they sometimes serve in. And so it's a frustrating place, but that's what they're there for. So their glamours are about wanting to control things so that people are more godly. And you can't do that. It's against God. So they have a contradiction. They usually get over that over time, but the beginnings are rough going, to say the least. All right. So these senses, when they are overcome by creating the ways that you can love God and God will love you, and you therefore use that love to co-create with others to help all of life, you join your senses together into one, and then you have the super sense of what I call super empathy, and you truly become God as God can express itself in its way of using the so-called quantum constant that is available and the quantum physics, which is joining now with what we would call standard physics. The two are really becoming one physics in the astral world. The illusion isn't separating even physics so much anymore, and people become aware quickly, as I did, that there is really one physics. It's just our illusions create this disparity between this separation. And so those are the lessons we learn when we go to the astral world, and that's part of the 50 ways. It's another 7 of the 50 ways that you can go through and become more a part of God. You see how it works? Wow. And then finally you get to the maniacic or mental world. You notice I'm spending most of my time in these lower three worlds because that's where humans hang out. I may run out of time to completely go through the other remaining ones, but if you got to know the 50 ways, the first 21 are probably the most important, honestly, and maybe a few of the remaining 7 in the Buddhic world. Beyond that, I'd lose most people anyway if I describe it, so I don't know how much it's going to help. And we'll run out of time. Even though I want to go a little bit over tonight, maybe we'll try to bank it till 35 minutes to 40 minutes after the hour, and then we'll call it a quit here. Again, that's a message to those who are listening in. So here we go. Looking at it from this standpoint now, in the mental world, and people do live in the mental world, of course, after their body gives out in the astral world, their senses give out, and their body gives out. From the glamours, it just gives out from that. But there are also the people in the highest regions of the astral world actually reach a point sometimes where they just voluntarily say, you know, time for me to move on because I probably can create a little bit more good overall if I go to the mental world right now because I'm ready for that. Not too many people reach that experience, but if you do, that's a good thing, good place to be. Okay, so you're in the mental world, and those in the mental world spend most of their time overcoming egotism and arrogance. A lot of their time, a huge amount, trying to overcome all of the untruths, lies they told themselves and others, due to their egotism and not being able to see truth and not being able to create more of it, and being relatively selfish in both respects. So it's an amazing thing that there are so many people that are going through this by going through what is called the, I'll call it the mental akasha, but it's a past part of time that's confused in the mental world, p- produced by all the egotism of people that have lived on Earth for eons. And it's messed up. It's pretty inaccurate. And some parts are 50% untruthful or more. Other parts are 30% or less. But it's a pretty messed up place because of that. So each person contributes by trying to undo those parts that they contributed through mostly the past life, but sometimes it goes to prior lives that were left over until their mental sense gives out in that particular way of using their mental senses. And, of course, they're trying to overcome these illusions so they can create more of God using seven more of the 50 ways. Now, the seven more are really in the lower mental world because they are using parts of the higher mental world and concepts at the same time, rejoining the mental world as it exists when they create truth completely and give it wisely to others in some service. They can't do it just while they're in the Akasha and then come out and reflecting on it and going back in it again. They have to do it after they awaken completely into the whole experience of the mental world where their senses work well enough so they can interact with others as sort of junior souls, not quite their souls, but they're very soul-like, and trying to figure out ways they can work together better in their next lifetimes. They actually start at that early of a time before they're back being their souls. So it's an amazing process, and they really are starting to join all different parts of the seven different ways in two different kinds of ways, one being thought form creation, the other being concept creation. And they can do it together, and it's possible. So it's a really interesting place. I find it much more fascinating than the astral world. And the illusions, egotism, are very strong and harder to get over than some glamours are. The idea that we want to be right more than we want to be humble and giving in wise ways is, for a lot of people, hard to understand. Yet, if you look at their daily life, they're continuously almost egotistical and continuously want to be right. If you have discussions with them, it's all about them being right, about whatever it is. Wars, almost everything that humans do, come from this crazy illusion of wanting to be right. So as much as we deny that that's what's going on with us, because it's rather embarrassing to be such a level of selfishness, we do it all the time. We all do it. It's terrible. Whoa. How bad is that? And it's more pronounced than glamours, because glamours are specific more to the person, whereas egotism has a lot of isms connected to it and concepts that provides almost like groups, large groups of people, all things that are right. And the largest group that I'm aware of, with the most amount of what we'll call organization and almost toxicity to their egotism, are people who are, call themselves progressives. Why is that? Because they want to control society and enforce their egotism through political and other agendas on others. Yeah. And again, that leads to a quick track into evil, certainly into darkness and eventually into evil. Of course, and that also moves quickly from egotism to arrogance. Arrogance, egotistical people still usually are caring and loving about the people that they are interacting with or have something to do with. Whereas arrogant people don't believe that others are even worth their time. They want to control them just because they get off on doing that, but they don't care about them in the true sense of the word. They may try to win their votes that way, or they may try to manipulate them so they have control over them, because that's the only control they have, is what they say and do, and what they say and write or propound upon to others. I mean, that's their ticket. That's how how they get to where they're going. All right, so this is a problem, and we're in the fifth race of humans, which have as an illusion, the worst part of their illusion is in the mental senses. And so you find today egotism far worse, and arrogance also, far worse than it was thousands of years ago, simply because people didn't think that well. But and the need to be right wasn't as big as the feeling thing. And nowadays, people would actually willing to suffer certain levels of feeling as long as they think they're right, and beyond that, they've convinced other people that they're right. Whoa. That's pretty strange, and yet that's what is going on. You can watch this. You can see it. You can observe it happening all around us all the time. And what we don't know is that people weren't as much like that thousands of years ago, because we don't have any historical account that measured that from that time. Yeah, it's a pretty strange thing. Pretty strange. All right, so how do we get around all this? I mean, this is it seems like a tremendous quagmire. Well, it takes hundreds of lifetimes to get over the egotism. As the human race strengthens in their mental senses, it becomes more difficult to get them to be humble and to, through their humility, which is the main way to do it, you overcome your egotism. But you also have to create. You have to create more light for and with others through the humility, that in the same way that God treats everybody. And allow people to be co-creative with you and not say, well, it's my way or the highway. You let them come up with the creations. And they may make terrible mistakes and screw things up, and you just let them do it. And if you're a teacher, that's really hard, because then people ignore what you teach and they make a kind of bastardization of it, or who knows? That's part of the difficulty of being a teacher, is that they're going to do that. They may even reject or invert or teach in a way which is almost 180 degrees from what you've taught. It doesn't matter. Humility. How can you tell them it's wrong? Once in a while. That's it. And if they don't listen, what can you do? Nothing. You just let them continue. Because the ultimate end is, if you're a good teacher and people ignore what you say, they're going to have a grueling, we'll say, life ahead. Eventually, they will figure it out. And there's not much more you can do anymore. Once someone reaches the egotistical part, they don't care what you say. They don't care what you teach, and they don't care about anyone else's thoughts. Most of other people's thoughts just bounce off the senses that have become collective of energy around them, and the energy is about all these weird concepts and thought forms that have nothing to do with the truth, but everything to do with the person feeling better about the way they see the world and the way the world sees them. They want a world that is just the way they like it to be. If you're progressive, it's a world that you have the dominating, controlling way of making things. You may not live, as a matter of fact, you may be a total hypocrite, you may not live any of the ways that you force others to, but the fact that you do force them to live a certain way usually allows you to control the material world that you're living in, if it's the astral or mental world, those worlds as well, by getting people to follow your distorted thought, sometimes through force, and other times through cajoling and conviction, but you still do it. And sometimes by logic, even if it's relatively faulty. Sometimes by concepts that are absolutely crazy. But nonetheless, you get it. You manage it, but because you have enough thought, even if it's screwball, to convince others that you're right and they're wrong. And you hone your ability to do that. Instead of trying to find the truth, you just try to convince others of your truth. A pretty bad system for those who are in it, and most people are partly in it, no matter what. Okay, so getting out of it requires adjusting the past and present parts of time, working in a time model, because that's where the sense you're gaining is of a completed sense of time. You've lived in a sense of the past being the dominant model, with the present being somewhat important, and the future you care less about. All you want is that you get what you want when you want it, and that's it. That's your future. Well, the future for people who join time together is that it supports God, and it supports wisdom that is given to people so that they become clearer thinking themselves, they become less egotistical, they become more humble, and they contribute more and more thought that is clear and truthful to others. This is the model that God created. This is the way to use those seven ways out of the 50 to create a more complete single sense, a sense of what is called love-wisdom. And that sense of love-wisdom, once you've got it, gives you the ability to be free from egotism and arrogance and to truly become humble in the mental world. Wow. The more you have of it, the better you can control and make it work, the better off you are, and it's a really important thing. This is the true, remarkable nature of God's 50 ways. Those that get that, by the way, are in the ending of their spiritual days as a human disciple. And they could be usually in their third initiation and beyond, and they're doing, and they're not split between that and the second or lower initiations. And they are able to be humble more than half the time when challenged about their own egotism. They may not be humble all the time or even half the time when they're not challenged, but at least when they're challenged, they are. And that's a very important part. So they have a lot of truth going on in them, and they function at much higher levels than most of the people. And they also are breaking the kama manasic connection. This is a great thing, because the kama manasic connection, we're born with that. That means we feel first and then try to make our thoughts coincide with our feelings. How wrong is that idea? Yeah, that's the way most people actually function. It's a terrible thing. Then you're not doing the 50 ways, for sure. You're separating rather than joining together the senses in each body, and between the bodies, you're only connecting them by the amount you separate them in the bodies. So if you have an equal amount of separation of your seven senses in your astral body and it matches your mental body, the two are completely joined. That's a full kama manasa connection. And it's the lower that controls in that situation with the lower forms of energy. And guess what? Man, you just think whatever, in a mental sense, whatever you feel in an astral sense. Governed by your feelings. And that's where a lot of people are at. Not everybody, a lot of people. Okay. I have very little time left here. So let's look at this thing from the standpoint of eventually people get the egotism gone, the arrogance gone, and they become open-minded, really find truth, the real truth of the universe. And they also give wisdom in very wise ways. Wise means it helps others to do the same. They're soul creators, not just in themselves, but they help others to be their souls. It's a very important part of the, let's say, maturation process and getting over the illusion of the mental world. Those that achieve that start developing a thing called buddhi, or what is buddhi, sometimes called intuitional thought. And as they develop it, in a sense, in a way that they can use one or more of their buddhic senses, once they can use one or more of those buddhic senses at will, when they need to, so they can help be even more in love with them, okay, then the ability, or we'll define it as the mental ability to create love wisdom, becomes a real sense of love wisdom in the Buddhic realm, and the person has achieved a part of beauty in their senses. But the most important thing is they can create now in the mental, astral, and physical world all at the same time. It's called white magic. They can create effortlessly, meaning that if needed in service, they can virtually instantly, no time at all, come up with a creative solution to any problem and to any new way of developing life and more of God. Whoa, that's... What do you call that? And there's a name for it. It's called omniscience. Omniscience is all-knowing, but it has a different meaning in metaphysical terms than it does as a denotative thing in English. All-knowing in omniscience would be denotatively, well, I have knowledge about this, I have knowledge about that. All-knowing in a metaphysical sense means the love-wisdom part. That ability to know is converted into the ability to wisely give truth to others, wisely, and to make it unified so that their minds are opened more and they can do some more of that for themselves and for others. This is the great, great gift of some. That some people, a few people have, that they can create for others. And it's an amazing thing, and it's very important. And if you're part of that, you already know that. Anything I'm teaching is just confirming more than it is anything else to the folks who understand this. But it's a great thing, and of course, you're outside now of the human experience. You're becoming a superhuman. The seven senses in each of the three bodies are not only joined together in the individual bodies, they now are joining together from one body to the next. So the three bodies are becoming one. And they are joining with one of the seven or more, well, one of the seven or more than one of the seven senses in the Buddhic body, as the person now serves mostly from Buddhic consciousness using the controlled intuition of their intuitional mind or Buddhic mind. This is more godly. This omniscient sense is more godly than the human senses by far. And those who do this really have a more direct experience of God than those who are yet to have achieved it. That direct experience alters their perception. They never doubt God. There's no doubt in their minds because they have become more of God than not in terms of being more superhuman than human. They get past, in their mental capacity at least, that point, and also in their thinking capacity in the higher realms, which includes the intuitional realm. So now illusion is totally a different thing to them. Illusion is really, we'll call it, the more truly hidden or esoteric parts of the spiritual side of existence. The more gross kinds of illusion only plague them as their bodies are destroyed, in a sense, because maybe their students are doing crazy things. But regardless of that, and that they suffer through, it doesn't matter. once they're in the true intuitional mode, teaching or whatever they're creating or doing, they instantly become superhuman, regardless of the damage to their bodies from whatever other service they're providing. A truly remarkable, truly remarkable state. Well, that's as far as I'm going to go to, because we don't have time for the rest. But I do want you to realize that there is more in the 50 ways. It's just that we'll have to do another show on that, because I can't, it's too far to go, and too much for most people to really absorb. All right, so the 50 ways of God are the 49 senses eventually becoming a one sense, a single sense, in which we and God share the experience of the entire universe, past, present, and future, and life now has become its co-creator. And the two are inseparable, except they separate each other, because that life then moves on to a different universe, because there are new experiences in a more advanced universe. It doesn't desert this universe. It actually participates in it from the unique advantages from the other ones. But regardless, that's way ahead of where we are. And it's way ahead of the intuitional plane. It gets into becoming truly part of God. Some people call it the logos. Logoic sense. That's the gain being God is what that word would mean. And so it's the center. It's the being at the center of God's mind, not in the peripheral where we are working right now. Well, I hope this has made some sense to you all, and that I haven't gone to the point where your brain's on fire and you can't think anymore. I hope you will re-listen to tonight's show, and it will give you further understanding and realize that the gifts are all within us to overcome all the problems we have, and we shouldn't doubt God. Really, it's just a delusion of doubt of our smaller selves, because we have destroyed so much connection and growth of that due to over-controlling nature and fears from our personal side, our personalities, which is more subconscious. Hopefully, this has given you some relief, at least that part. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.